the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Your money, our top story. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast.
We have yet another day of banking concerns dragging down the market.
Treasury Secretary Yellen being grilled right now on Capitol Hill over the fallout from recent bank failures in New York and California.
This week, the government took decisive and forceful actions to stabilize and strengthen public confidence in our financial system.
Money manager David Faber.
Confidence is the key in the financial system. It was the key in 2008 as well. It went away very quickly. Here, if depositors don't feel comfortable in some way, if they're not confident their money is safe, they may choose to pull it.
The bank's failure last week forced emergency action from the federal government. CNBC's Brian Chung asks,
if more banks domestically were to fail, what would that do to the economy?
Well, if we saw widespread failure, that would significantly weaken the lending growth, the growth to businesses and households. That would undermine the economy, and we would go into recession.
Today, the Treasury Secretary assured lawmakers that taxpayer money is not at risk, and Americans can feel confident their deposits will be there when they need them. Open borders, the other big story today. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Raul Ortiz tells congressional leaders that the southern border is open. Open for business, and not the good kind of business.
Does DHS have operational control of our entire border?
No, sir.
You heard the secretary. He said we have operational control. That's the definition of operational control.
Based upon the definition you have, sir, up there, no.
We don't have operational control.
No, sir.
Ortiz testifying at a field hearing in McAllen, Texas, that was boycotted by Democrats.
The Democrats are not here. They decided to not show. Why?
This is an American issue. It's appalling that the Democrats didn't show up and America is under attack.
Democrats called that hearing political theater. So far this year, nearly a million migrants from 150 countries have been caught trying to cross the southern border. Russian warships are at the site in the Black Sea where a U.S. drone was intercepted by two Russian fighter jets this week. One of those jets clipped a propeller on that drone, forcing a splashdown some 75 miles off the coast of Russian-controlled Crimea. General Mark Milley chairs the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
We know where it landed in the Black Sea. It's probably about maybe 4,000 or 5,000 feet of water, something like that. So any recovery operation is very difficult at that depth. We know that the intercept was intentional. We know that the aggressive behavior was intentional. We also know it was very unprofessional and very unsafe.
Milley downplaying the incident, saying once the investigation's complete, everyone needs to move on. Ari Fleischer at Fox News says we can't move on.
Don't accept it. Don't do what Milley did and said, I'm ready to move beyond it. I'm not ready to move beyond it. You cannot let an adversary do this to us, and we just accept it.
Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton.
President Biden needs to come out and forcefully make it clear that we will not tolerate this kind of provocative action. If we don't stop this Russian aggression in Europe, it will only invite more aggression in the future.
The White House says it will continue to patrol the Black Sea, and we will not be intimidated by Russia. The U.S. military has released video footage of the mid-air collision over international waters. North Korea test-fired its first intercontinental ballistic missile in a month today. Splashdown happened in the Sea of Japan. That military exercise took effect just hours before a major summit between the South and Japan. It's been over a decade since a leader of South Korea has met face-to-face with Japan. A judge in Texas will rule soon on whether to ban an abortion pill that's been legal for 20 years. Pro-life activists argue the drug mifepristone should never have been legalized in the first place.
It is not being accurately reported by the FDA on the complications and the risk it does pose to the public.
John Sega with Texas Right to Life. Rachel O'Leary is an abortion rights activist.
What happens here today will be felt by all Americans, no matter what your feelings are on abortion.
Many are calling the judge's decision the most significant on abortion in this country since last summer's decision to reverse Roe. Maternal mortality rates have hit their highest level since 1965. 55. The National Center for Health Statistics says the number of pregnant women in this country who died jumped 40% during the second year of the pandemic. Officials say COVID was a major factor. The Biden administration is threatening a nationwide ban on TikTok if the Chinese-owned app isn't sold. White House correspondent Kristen Welker.
The administration is demanding the company's Chinese owners ByteDance sell their stake in the social media giant.
TikTok firing back, saying if protecting national security is the objective, then divestment doesn't solve the problem. TikTok is used by more than 100 million Americans. Critics say China uses it to spy on us. Still to come on the Noon Report, bickering at the bargaining table in Buffalo. Ithaca goes to pot and Black Bear in Horseheads.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams, calling for a relatively milder day today compared to yesterday, but we've got some rain coming up by later tonight and tomorrow. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, we will look for you then. Thank you, Kevin. Let's check the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania next. New York's plans for high-speed rail service isn't very high speed after all. That plan involves installing about 270 miles of new rail lines that would accommodate trains at speeds of no more than 90 miles per hour. The $6 billion project would get a passenger from Niagara Falls to New York City in 7 hours and 30 minutes. That's only 90 minutes quicker than the existing rail route that traverses the state. The first adult-use cannabis dispensary in central New York officially opens for business today.
The marijuana dispensary named William Jane is located on East State Street in Ithaca. It will open for business at 4:20 this afternoon. 4:20 is a term synonymous with smoking pot. Only New Yorkers with prior drug convictions are allowed to operate cannabis consumption stores. The one in Ithaca will receive financial support from the New York State Social Equity Cannabis Investment Fund. Critics contend the societal ills created by marijuana legislation far outweigh the profits that pot provides. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you very much. There is a drug overdose epidemic in Oneida County. Response teams there have issued an alert following a large number of ODs in the area the past few days. Police have responded to no fewer than 7 overdoses since just last Friday. None were fatal, thankfully, but several involved the drug fentanyl. New York State is appealing a judge's ruling that says emergency mandates on infectious diseases like COVID are unconstitutional. Western New York State Senator George Borrello is disappointed that Governor Hochul would challenge that ruling.
She thinks that she can just use taxpayer money to continue to appeal this and hope that we will tire out. Well, we are not tiring out. We will fight this. It's important for every New Yorker to understand that their basic rights and freedoms are under attack.
Borrello tells Family Life News if the Hochul administration is successful, then government bureaucrats could use public health as an excuse to crack down on your constitutional rights.
They could deny someone their freedom. The rules that they created would allow them to pull someone from their home without reason, without justification, and using law enforcement.
Borrello accuses the Hochul administration of abusing its pandemic powers and running roughshod over the people of New York. The Diocese of Buffalo announcing that a priest has been placed on administrative leave for a second time. Monsignor Peter Popadick facing another child abuse complaint. He was serving as pastor of a church in Cheektowaga. Popadick had previously been suspended after being accused of molesting a minor, but was allowed to return to ministry after an investigation could not substantiate that claim. Still no deal on a contract for teachers in Buffalo, New York's second largest school district. The 4-year logjam came to a head again last night. WIVB's Tara Lynch.
Contentious talks continued between the Buffalo Teachers Federation and the Buffalo Public School District. The bickering at the bargaining table continues, with one main sticking point keeping them from reaching a deal. The district says they're so close but yet so far. The union says it takes two to tango.
That's Tara Lynch in Buffalo. Retiree health insurance is the main sticking point in the contract talks.
Every time we get closer, it feels like we make two steps forward and then we go one step back.
The district says if they can't reach a deal by July 1st, the Buffalo teachers will have to go another year without a contract. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro is talking about the Commonwealth teacher shortage problem. He's dangling financial carrots to get more educators in the classroom.
If we fail to act, if we fail to take these common sense steps, we will have an even greater crisis tomorrow.
Shapiro wants to invest $25 million into teacher recruitment and retention programs. His budget includes a $2,500 tax credit for newly certified teachers or teachers who move to Pennsylvania from other states. A recent poll shows solid support for school choice in New York. Family Life's Abigail Hoffland has the details.
A majority of adults, including 80% of school parents, support education savings accounts, or ESAs, which are government-authorized accounts allowing parents to save and direct funds for their children's education. 63% of adults support school vouchers, which give parents the flexibility to use public funds at either public or private schools. Among school parents, voucher support jumps to 76% in New York. This comes as polling data shows just 38% of New Yorkers viewing the state's education system as heading in a good direction. Abigail Hoffland, Family Life News.
All right, welcome aboard. Thank you, Abigail. Families across the Empire State will be finding it a bit easier to access child care thanks to the launch of a brand new online tool. Now, this tool will allow parents to see if they are eligible for monetary assistance from the state's Child Care Assistance Program. Families can fill out a questionnaire that lets them know if they meet the basic criteria. New legislation pending in Pennsylvania would prevent the state from suspending driver's licenses. Family Life's Terry Diener has more.
The bill specifically points to fines from traffic violations. Current PA law restricts or revokes licenses of individuals who are in debt, a process that disproportionately impacts an already vulnerable class of lower-income individuals. Advocates argued that a driver's license is used for essential things that the state should not have the ability to punish for late fees, like making a living and caring for family members. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
All right, Terry, thank you. Officials at the Strong Museum of Play in Rochester have announced the finalists for this year's Video Game Hall of Fame. The nominees include Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare, Angry Birds, and Wii Sports. Games are judged based on their longevity, influence on the culture, and international appeal. A large black bear is roaming a neighborhood in Horseheads, New York. It's been doing some damage, too, as it's scours for food.
The bear's been here for about a week, week and a half now, ever since he woke up.
John Shields tells WETM.
He lays right out here underneath our bird feeders and just reaches up and grabs a bird feeder and pulls it down and starts eating away.
Yeah, that's what bears do. Shields says this bear doesn't seem to be too much of a threat so far.
He's spooked by dogs and everything else and people walking down the road, so if he sees anybody or anything, he just runs away.
The black bear has been wandering into backyards there in Horseheads near the Mark Twain Golf Course. The season of sneezing nearly here. State College-based AccuWeather is out with its yearly spring allergy forecast. Pollen is already popping up following an exceptionally warm February. Experts say in just a few short weeks, allergens will kick into full gear. Trees are commonly the earliest pollen producers. That happens in the early spring. Grass pollen typically begins to dominate by early summer. Won't be too much longer. Let's check sports next on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, it was a tough, tough loss for the Sabres last night in Washington. Buffalo led 3-1 going into the third period, then 4-2 during the final frame, before the Caps tied it at 4 with just over a minute to play. And then Washington won the shootout. With the win, the Caps are now fourth in the Eastern Conference wildcard race with 73 points. Buffalo is fifth, just a point back with 72. Out west, the Islanders fell behind the Ducks 2-1 after the first period, but New York roared back with five unanswered goals, and they won it 6-3. The Avs won in a shootout over the Leafs 2-1. The Wild knocked off St. Louis 8-5. On to the NBA. Joel Embiid led the way again for Philadelphia. He had 36 points and 18 rebounds. The Sixers won their sixth in a row, 118-109 over Cleveland. James Harden had 28. Tyrese Maxey chipped in with 23. Elsewhere on the hardwood, the Heat, Kings, Rockets, Celtics, Mavs, and Clippers picked up wins. Baseball. The United States picked up a big win by edging Colombia 3-2 in the World Baseball Classic. Mike Trout drove in all three runs on a pair of singles. So the Americans will face Venezuela in the quarterfinals on Saturday. Puerto Rico knocked off the Dominican Republic 5-2, but news for the New York Mets coming out of this game? Not good. Closer Edwin Diaz injured his knee in Puerto Rico's celebration, and reports are saying he could miss significant time in the upcoming regular baseball season. The Field of 64 is set. March Madness is ready to begin. In fact, right now, with Maryland taking on West Virginia. That is a look at sports.
All right, get those brackets ready, folks. Here we go. Thank you, Randy. Still to come on the Noon Report, was it an accident? Russia's downing of a U.S. drone. How safe are our banks anyway? And we'll tell you about an important victory for religious freedom in the public square. It's Faith Under Fire right after this.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. The Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. In February, the U.S. Department of Education announced its intent to rescind the free inquiry rule, which was established in 2020 by then-Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. According to the rule, universities that receive federal funding cannot deny any right, any benefit, any privilege to student organizations simply because they're religious in nature. It's a common sense rule designed to fix an increasingly common problem of campus authorities unjustly pressuring and discriminating against religious student groups. For example, during the 2014 and 15 academic year, the California State University system withdrew recognition from InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. Why? Well, because it required its leaders to hold Christian beliefs. In fact, according to a Christian Legal Society fact sheet, similar incidents also occurred at the University of Arizona, Northern Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Boise State University, the University of Illinois, Indiana University, the University of Michigan, and others. One religious organization that has multiple chapters was forced to seek legal counsel regarding their presence on 16 different public colleges and universities in just the last 4 years. The 2020 Open Inquiry Rule was designed to give student religious organizations a more fairly represented playing field. In the announcement that the rule would now be repealed, the Biden administration has claimed that the regulations are too burdensome and confusing, that the First Amendment is strong enough to protect students' religious freedom, and that there's no evidence that anyone has benefited from the 2020 rule. Well, that just depends on what you mean by anyone and benefit. In fact, the Biden Department of Education admits they have yet to receive any complaints regarding the original rule. Their real problem with the rule is really about worldview. Because in their view, religious liberty is too expansive already, and ensuring it on publicly funded campuses presents an even greater threat to even more quote-unquote marginalized groups. But protecting religious expression is vital, not just for Christians, but for everyone. Conscience rights are pre-political rights. They provide the foundation on which all other liberties are built. Protecting that foundation on campuses requires, at minimum, allowing religious student groups to meet on campus, to use allocated student funding just like any other group can, to choose leaders who adhere to the stated beliefs and values that define their group, and to think and speak as freely as other students can. Please, would you take a minute to show support for these groups and these courageous students? Like all federal agencies, the Department of Education is required to publish their proposed rule changes and receive public comment before they implement the new rules. This ensures at least some degree of public debate and government accountability. And our friends over at the Christian Legal Society have made it easy to submit a comment to the Department of Education. Please go to regulations.gov to submit a comment, but only after reviewing the Christian Legal Society fact sheet at christianlawstudents.org. That's christianlawstudents.org. The deadline to comment on this new rule with the Department of Education is Friday, March 24th. It only takes about 5 minutes to remind the Department of Education that religious liberty really matters on campus. It'll take a lot longer to remind our neighbors, teachers, and university systems of the same truth, but an even longer time to recover this freedom, which is a public good for everyone, once it is lost. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Outside we go next, meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life weather forecast. For this afternoon, clouds and some sunshine, relatively mild. High temperatures, mid-40s to the low 50s. For tonight, turning out cloudy. There'll be some rain or rain showers reaching parts of western New York and western Pennsylvania later tonight and the rest of the region tomorrow. Temperatures overnight dipping into the 30s. Highs tomorrow, 40s and low 50s, with falling temperatures in the afternoon in western New York and western Pennsylvania. Brisk, colder Saturday, variable cloudiness, snow flurries, with high temperatures in the 30s and lower 40s.
All right, spring will get here sometime. In fact, it officially arrives Monday. Thank you, Kevin. This is the Noon Report. I'm Bob Price. Lots going on Thursday, the 16th of March. Treasury Secretary Yellen is testifying before Congress right now about America's growing fears over the banking industry.
Our banking system is sound and that Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them.
Banks in New York and California collapsed last week. A third overseas is borrowing billions to stay afloat. Now, nervous investors are starting to worry about the solvency of our banking system.
It is a little scary to know that these banks that aren't all that small could have a trickle effect and affect the entire economy.
The White House and congressional Democrats are pushing for tighter banking regulations. Republicans argue reckless spending is what's created the conditions that have led to the bank's collapse. A federal judge in Texas promising a ruling soon in a bid to block access to an abortion pill that was legalized 20 years ago by the FDA. That drug, mifepristone, is part of a two-step chemical abortion process that makes up 53% of all the abortions in this country. Pro-lifers say the drug is unsafe, not just for unborn babies, of course, but also for the mothers who are getting those do-it-yourself abortions. The U.S. military releasing the video that shows the downing of an American drone by a Russian fighter jet. The international incident is escalating tensions between the two countries. Here's correspondent Keir Simmons.
This is dramatic video and diplomatically a big deal. Why? Because it appears to be the first known physical contact between the Russian and U.S. military since the war in Ukraine began. You don't see the actual collision, but you do see the Russian fighter jet flying towards the drone, a camera malfunction, and a bent propeller.
The mid-air collision forced that $32 million drone to splash down into the Black Sea. The Justice Department warns over 1,000 more people could face charges for the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Up to 1,200 face possible arrests for taking part in the protest January 6, 2021. 1,000 have already been busted. 500 have pled guilty. About 50 have been convicted. More than 100 protesters at UC Davis in California tried to stop a conservative from speaking on campus this week. Cops had to be called in. The speaker was Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA.
The core issue is that these college campuses, we know that they've become radical. We know that they're no longer places of free speech. But a speaker on an American college campus, if you want to come and talk about free speech and American values, it should not be a danger to fellow students or to the speaker.
Left-wing protesters smashed windows, hurled eggs, used pepper spray, and blocked people from entering the building where the event was held.
It's tragic that when you go to a college campus, you have to experience a quasi-military war zone. And what's sick and what is manipulative is you have these reporters that almost enjoy it. They manufacture a synthetic mob to go after a speaker they don't like.
University officials had to eventually cancel the event. Houston, we have a problem. The state of Texas is taking over Houston Public Schools, the fourth largest school district in America.
The head of the Texas Education Agency making the announcement that the democratically elected Houston School District Board of Trustees will be replaced by a TEA Board of Managers. Mike Morath said in a statement that in prior years, the Houston Board did not focus on improving student outcomes.
Chris Fox reporting a church-run Christian school in Connecticut is suing the state over
its vaccine mandate, the state of Connecticut requires students at the Milford Christian Academy be vaccinated. The church claims that mandate violates the First Amendment. Connecticut law was updated a couple years ago to remove religious exemptions from the vaccine mandates. The mandate applies to measles, mumps, rubella, and polio, but not COVID or the flu. You're listening to the Noon Report, a Thursday edition on Family Life.
This is Faith Under Fire. From Family Life, I'm Greg Gillespie. A federal court last week approved a final settlement in a religious liberty case involving a Syracuse pregnancy center. Our guest today is Mark Lippelman, an attorney for the Alliance Defending Freedom that represented the Syracuse pregnancy center.
New Hope Family Services is an adoption agency and pregnancy center operating in Syracuse, New York, and they've been serving families and women there for over 50 years, and in that time, they've successfully placed over 1,000 children in loving families. And so they've had a great track record and relationship with the state. They had an annual appraisal in 2018, and everything went great, as it always had. But a week later, the state called and said, "We noticed that you have a faith-based religious policy that you spend your efforts placing children in homes with a married mother and father, and you either need to violate your religious convictions or we're going to shut you down." So we were forced to sue the state of New York to block them from shutting New Hope down. We were able to go all the way to the Court of Appeals and received a good decision there, and also the district court in the state of New York. And so we have multiple federal decisions ruling that New Hope has religious and free speech rights that can't be infringed. We won that case.
Based on that decision that came out of the state's Child and Family Services, is it a New York law that folks were acting on, or were they taking that in their own hands to decide that to be a New York adoption agency, you must accept anybody who comes in the door?
They were seeking to enforce or interpret a New York law that wouldn't allow New Hope Family Services to operate according to its religious convictions and its personal experience that the best home and the best interest of the child are served by a family with a married mother and father who are committed to one another for life. And so both a court of appeals and a federal district court held that that is an unconstitutional violation of their free speech rights, and it's also a violation of their religious liberty.
Mark, this case that has been settled successfully in New Hope's favor is one of two parallel lawsuits that New Hope is fighting against state officials in New York.
Not only was New Hope Family Services forced to file a lawsuit, its original lawsuit in 2019, in order to vindicate its rights from the state Office of Children and Family Services that were trying to shut it down. As we won in the Court of Appeals in that case, long after that, the state, through a different state agency, tried to use another law to come after New Hope to shut them down and penalize them. And so New Hope was forced to file yet another lawsuit with the same judge in the same court. And we obtained another order protecting its constitutional rights and telling the state that it couldn't enforce the law and penalize New Hope. This is a situation where it's every religious person and every religious organization, but even when you're talking about one particular organization, you have state officials who decide over and over again to penalize and target even the same adoption agency. We're hopeful that positive orders in both those cases will cause the state to be more reluctant to target religious people in the future.
What about lessons for Christian agencies and Christian ministries when there is such opposition to activities that are faith-based? It would be very easy to just water things down. What lessons should be learned widespread from what's happening with the New Hope Family Services cases?
Sure. Well, I would say two things. I would say, first of all, know that you have constitutional protections. You do have a strong constitutional right to speak and to say what's on your mind, and you have a right to religious exercise. But that requires actual religious speech, and it requires you to actually exercise that religion and those religious beliefs. And so I would just encourage fellow Christians to be bold and courageous in continuing to speak and act in accordance with their faith. And the other thing I would say is it's easy in this climate to be discouraged, sometimes to be frustrated or to get angry. There's a temptation toward that. But I would just encourage everyone to be joyful, even in the midst of difficulty, and that others would know us by our love and the way that we treat people. And so those two things, I would just encourage people to continue speaking and living out their faith in love.
Mark Lippelman, an attorney who represented New Hope in their successful lawsuit on First Amendment rights for Christian organizations. I'm Greg Gillespie, Family Life News. Thanks for listening to Faith Under Fire. All right, Greg, thanks for that. All our Faith Under Fire podcasts, by the way, are available online at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. High pressure will continue to keep our region protected from any rain or snowfall this afternoon, but give ground to lower pressure coming in from the Midwest. It'll deliver some rain to the area later tonight and tomorrow. Chillier air follows it over the weekend. For this afternoon, clouds and some sunshine, relatively mild. High temperatures, mid-40s to the low 50s. For tonight, turning out cloudy. There'll be some rain or rain showers reaching parts of western New York and western Pennsylvania later tonight and the rest of the region tomorrow. Temperatures overnight tipping into the 30s. Highs tomorrow, 40s and low 50s, with falling temperatures in the afternoon in western New York and western Pennsylvania. Brisk, colder Saturday, variable cloudiness and snow flurries with high temperatures in the 30s and lower 40s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally at noon today, a new top dog in the U.S. of A. Family Life's Brian Querry.
The numbers are in, and the American Kennel Club has reviewed dog registration information from 2022, and the data reveals that the French Bulldog is now the most popular variety of purebred dog in the country, ending the 31-year reign of the popular Labrador Retriever. French Bulldogs were the number two breed last year, and labs have now moved down to the number two spot. Rounding out the top five were Golden Retrievers in third, followed by German Shepherds and Poodles, and at the bottom of the list, the English Foxhound. In an announcement, the Kennel Club said that, quote, breaking the lab's top dog status is no small feat, saying that the Frenchie is a smart breed, perfect for people all across the country. The French Bulldog's rise in the rankings proves the increase in its popularity and that anything is possible. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
All right, thank you very much, Brian. And just like that, we're out of time, folks. That's the world we live in. Thursday, the 16th of March. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.